And welcome to the Pocket Full of Awesome podcast. This is the first episode of the podcast that is the most awesome on the entire internet ever.
It's true.
I'm PJ Perez, the guy that writes stuff and does other stuff. And with me over here is Michael Willoughby, also known as...
Your Mikey Vegas.
Yeah, your Mikey Vegas.
Your Mikey Vegas. Your friendly neighborhood Mikey Vegas, sometimes. Sometimes I'm less friendly, but usually I'm
pretty
friendly.
Do you wear red and blue underoos underneath your clothes?
You don't need to get in on that on the first episode of the podcast.
Well...
I'm just saying.
What else are we going to get into? We don't talk about your underwear.
I'm pretty sure we have plenty to get into.
We do, and we do. And for anyone that doesn't know, we have no idea how this started. I'm pretty sure that for some reason on Twitter one day I said, hey, I should do a podcast and Mike should do it with me.
Pretty much. It was one of those things where I think we were thinking the same thing at about the same time, possibly for a while.
Right.
But yeah. No, it was just, I don't know, synchronicity, brother.
That, and for some reason, people wanted to hear my voice, which is pretty ludicrous.
Who doesn't want to hear your voice,
well,
PJ?
Well, I think they want to hear it's whispering sweet nothings is what it is.
We have time for that.
Well, we do. We're actually recording this from the same studio in which my band, As Yet Unbroken, rehearses and records, which is located deep within the bowels of Casa Awesome. Appropriately enough, the home of a Pocket Full of Awesome.
Right.
And other awesome things. There's something else going on today, isn't there? Say
I don't know. There's some sports something going on.
People are buying like Doritos and stuff and beer and they're hanging
ordering
out.
Ordering pizza and wings and doing all that. I'm pretty sure there's going to be some spousal abuse going on later on, some domestic violence, as it were.
Well, I'm
just saying.
Here?
No, not here.
Oh, okay.
No, that would never happen in Casa Awesome.
Right, of course not.
Deep within the heart of Awesome City.
So we've today's episode is brought to you by Patron Silver. And Jumping Cow Amber Ale, which is available at your neighborhood Trader Joe's supermarket.
Both of which are delicious.
They are.
They're fantastic. They're making my early afternoon, late morning.
Yeah, by the way, it's 12:25 on a Sunday, and we've already done shots of Patron, and Mike has donuts and coffee and beer and water. I'm pretty sure his bowels are going to explode halfway through this thing.
Which would be pretty awesome.
It would be. Although none of this so far sounds all that awesome, I guess we should get on. We should talk about what we're going to talk about.
Yeah,
today.
We're wasting a lot of time. We should probably roadmap for the people.
Well, we're going to talk about some kind of topical stuff. Politics a little bit.
Little politics, little local politics.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some budget issues here in the fine state of Nevada that will possibly cripple us for years to come, as if we weren't crippled enough. We're going to talk about Obama's Vegas comment and how whiny Las Vegas people are.
Yes.
I'm probably going to rant a little bit about concert going in the 21st century.
I think I'm going to have a little something to add to
Definitely.
That as well. Yeah.
And what else are we going to talk about?
We got a little music for the people.
Oh,
we got a little Ike Riley. I'll be talking about the Ike Riley. And I believe you're going to be dropping some knowledge on the POS.
POS, yes, indeed. And then at Mike's behest, I'm going to try to explain to him just what is so awesome about Muse.
Yeah, because I don't get it.
Right.
I don't get it. I don't have a negative opinion, but I don't have any opinion at all. So I need an explainer on that one.
I get that.
I say that common enemy is the white man.
What the hell
Isn't
was
it
that?
Always? Isn't it always? Haven't we learned that?
No, you can't. Oh, that music must mean that it's time for us to talk about music. No, wait, for us to talk about current events.
Current events.
I got all confused.
Some current events music.
That's I don't know what that was. Anyway, that was, by the way, Under the Influence of Giants. I don't know if you're familiar with them. They kind of do a little dance funk thing.
Dance funk thing?
Yeah.
Anti-white man, anti-America?
Yeah, pretty much.
They hate your freedoms?
Yes. Hey, did we decide if we're gonna curse like sailors on this thing?
That was kind of a foregone conclusion.
Okay.
I hadn't really planned on it. I planned on just having a conversation with you.
Like, does iTunes have ratings? Like,
I'm pretty sure they do, but I'm also pretty sure that in order for them to actually pay attention to us, something would actually have to happen.
Very true. And people would actually have to listen.
That's right.
Which, you know, I don't know if there's going to be more than three people. So
I'm not sure that's going to be a problem.
Do you want to kick this off?
Yeah, I suppose so. Do we actually want to kick it off with the big stuff?
No,
first?
Let's talk about the little stuff.
Okay.
So today's that big game that we're not going to mention by name because
Because evidently we can't.
Right.
Because if we did, we would be sued into the ground.
Which doesn't make any sense because you can reference... I mean, if you're reporting on something, you reference it...
It's a proper noun.
Right.
I mean, it has the capital
letters.
I mean,
you know, fuck the Super
Bowl.
Fuck the Super Bowl.
How about that?
Fuck the Super Bowl
and sue me for it. How about that? Take what I don't have.
Meanwhile, fuck the Miss America pageant.
Yeah, you know what? Double fuck the Miss America pageant for their troglodyte fucking judge.
Troglodyte, that was nice.
You like that?
Didn't, yeah.
I'm bringing it out. I'm not even the one that...
The fact that you actually know anything about a judge for Miss America
is... Oh, come on, dude. This year, you don't know anything about...
I avoided that like
about,
the plague.
About the drugster?
Oh, no.
Rush? No? Rush Limbaugh?
Fat he was
fuck?
One of the judges?
Yeah, brother. He was one of the judges.
What makes
this
Rush
year?
Limbaugh qualified to be a Miss America judge?
That's a good question. I don't know. He is a lecherous fuck.
Well,
so that might qualify.
So was I at some point. I don't know if I was.
Well, so was I.
However, I have judged pageants before, so I guess.
Have you really?
Yeah.
Did you judge the fancy pageant walking?
Yeah. Well, kind of, not really. I judged some subversive pageants.
Oh, see, that's different.
You know,
that's
the Miss Altees No Sleaze pageant.
Right. That's different.
That was different.
That's different. And unless there's, I don't know, some kind of creepifying JonBenet vibe to it, it's not a real pageant.
I keep my pageant judging to those 18 and over. I also keep my porn surfing to those 18 and over. It's just in case anyone's listening that...
NSA, yeah, FBI.
Right.
Whatever. That's right. No child predators here.
Exactly. Oh, also, fuck the Grammys.
Mm.
Not that I even know. I don't know anything except that I know that Taylor Swift got like Album of the Year and...
Well, of course she did. Somebody had to make up for the, you know, for the big, like, least scariest black dude on the planet scaring the shit out of the little white girl.
Right, right.
So you
give her a Grammy.
At the VMAs. Of course you do.
Right.
Of course you do. Yeah. No, the thing that I don't understand about the Grammys and the thing that drives me nuts about the Grammys and just award season overall, I guess, with a brief exception to the People's Choice Awards. Because that's ostensibly from the people.
Mm.
And when you're a big commie socialist like me, I'm easy to please.
It's from the people top down, though, because I looked at the options for voting.
Mm-hmm.
And the options for it's kind of the same way the City Life here in Las Vegas does its
right.
annual best of.
Right.
The editors pre-select for you your options, and then you are forced to choose from those.
Right.
And I know because, you know, I have a band that may have been able to be selected by the people, but they couldn't be because the paper didn't include them in the
right.
nominations.
And by the way, just as a side note to the band who probably should have been selected by the people, they deserve it. Seriously, in a town with a musical culture like ours that's brought you such luminaries as Slaughter, and
don't knock on Slaughter
and Panic at the disco. It's nice. It's nice to hear some legitimate rock and roll going on.
Well, I appreciate you saying that.
I'm just saying that.
I'll give you the hand job later.
I couldn't get more up on your dick, PJ.
Well,
no. Actually, I could, but then this would be a different podcast.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Plus, we have to keep the microphones at a distance from each other or else we get, like, feedback and stuff.
It's true. It's true.
At least so, I think.
Keep telling yourself that.
So, I think we're mutually over the awards season. And
yeah,
the validation of most of these awards is completely lost at this point.
So insular and self-serving. Just, like, it could not get any more incestuous than that. It would have to be, like, Donnie and Marie to get more incestuous than these award shows.
You would. We're not going to say anything bad about Donnie Marie, though.
Not at all. It just, their whole marketing thing just creeps me out. Side note, just a little creepy and not very wholesome. I'm just saying.
Well.
Because I'm all about the wholesome.
Right. I know you are.
Look at me. Listen to me.
I have no choice.
Yeah, I know you don't.
Something else that hit the news big this last week for some reason, which it really shouldn't have been news at all, was President Obama's comment that you don't blow a bunch of cash on Vegas when you're trying to save for college. So what?
Well, not to mention, I mean, I will see your so what and raise you a yeah and. I mean, really? That's pretty truthful, isn't it? I mean, number one, isn't that kind of part of the problem? Isn't that part of what got us here? Is just not saving for the future, not looking past Friday of this week?
Well, exactly. Well, and you and I understand the sentiment that the president was trying to get across.
Yes.
Reactionary Nevadans such as Harry Reid and Las Vegas Mayor Oscar Goodman, for some reason, every time, look, I understand that it may feel like Obama's using Vegas as a whipping, as kind of like the poster child for, you know, decadence. And
oh no, and that's
but I mean, the fact is, we've earned that. Not only have we earned that reputation, but for Christ's sake, we put it out there.
Yes, yes, that we have a self-created image. Thank you, LVCVA.
Exactly.
Okay, your slogan was fantastic. And if, for those not in the know, we're talking about the "What Happens Here Stays Here" ad campaign that ran for like what, 3 years?
Yeah, very long, and has lives on in perpetuity.
And yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's how you know how good it was, because that's what we're identified as
right
now. And this started as self-identification. This isn't something that the media did to us. This is something that we did to ourselves. Look, we're Disneyland for adults. And we like it. We like it when times are good. We love it. We love that, you know, that two-thirds of Southern California rolls out here on a Friday night and leaves Sunday afternoon.
Right.
We like that, and that's great when there's a bunch of fake money and credit rolling around that people can blow here. But, you know, again, he didn't say anything that was out of line. He didn't say anything that was not absolutely grounded in reality. But our, you know, two or three martini mayor, you know, has to get up in arms because, you know, really, we're just misunderstood, aren't we?
Right. You know, Obama's statements don't affect the public's perception of Vegas, but the statements that do are the ones coming from Goodman and Reid that make us sound like a bunch of whiny bitches.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, oh, absolutely. Don't beat up on us. Like, you know what? I would use Vegas as that reference, too. What else are you going to use it as? It's become synonymous with excess and just wasting money, to be honest.
Absolutely.
And we're fine with that. You guys can come and waste the money. But the point he was making had nothing to do with Vegas. The point he was making was, instead of blowing your cash,
right.
Save it. That's all. That's it. That's it.
Yep. He could have used anything other than Vegas. And, you know, and then the argument that I saw a lot about this was, well, why did he have to single Vegas out? Because it's the example. I mean, we really are the example for that. When you think of going out and you know, drinking yourself to a stupor and running around and doing things that you can't afford, for a lot of the country, that's Vegas.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. You know, and again, we earned this through our ad campaigns. We earned this through having, what, 5-6 different TV shows on the air for many years at any given different time with nothing but excess on it. So we've earned it. Live with it. Sack up. Grow a spine. Grow the fuck up.
Exactly. And yeah, I think that's all there is to be said about that. So they probably spent enough time on that.
Into the ground, we run it.
I say that common enemy is the white man.
We have to remember that it's the white man's problem.
It really is. It is.
What color is the governor of Nevada, Jim Gibbons?
He is white enough.
I say that common enemy is the white man.
That's what I'm saying. It's true.
It is true. He is white enough that he thinks Wonder Bread belongs in the ethnic food aisle. I'm pretty sure that when he, at one point in the last, I don't know, 10 or 20 years, when he actually did his own grocery shopping, I'm sure he was very confused by that.
But yeah. So for those listening who don't live in the fabulous state of Nevada, and I don't know why anyone outside of here would be listening, except for my internationally renowned status as a raconteur and illustrative genius.
Really? A bunch of people are actually just thinking about Jack White now.
Right.
Now that you said
right.
That's he's
true.
Like, he's in that band? I didn't know that he was in that band. He's famous.
Well, I'm hoping the people that listen to us actually know the definition of raconteur, but...
Well, yeah.
Although I may not be proving that right now. you know, unless you want me to talk about, well, we're not going to talk about that. So, okay. So anyway, for the people not from Nevada, what's the background for the situation here in the fabulous state, Silver State?
Well, the background goes like this. We're fucked, budget-wise, which is something that seems to be echoing very familiar, across the nation, across the world, really, but really, here in the U.S., we're coming out of, depending on whose numbers you want to use, 16 years, 20 years, 8 years, depends on whose numbers you want to use, of that good old conservative ideology that says lower taxes and cut taxes and cut taxes. And believe me, look, I hate taxes. I don't like paying taxes. I don't think anybody really enjoys paying taxes. Okay, some of us are okay with paying taxes.
I enjoy it, just for the record.
Well, no, I mean, but again, why do you enjoy it?
But that's because of the outcome of those taxes.
Yes.
I can
yes.
see the bigger picture.
Right, exactly. And that's the bigger picture. The bigger picture, the outcomes of this is what we have been missing for, you know, depending on your timeline, either close to a decade or close to two or maybe three, right. whatever. Because when you cut taxes, there is no... There's no tooth fairy that just shows up. There's no Santa Claus who just shows up and makes things like, I don't know, your school budget happen out of thin air. And when you put in the specific example of Nevada, put giving people a refund on their freaking car registration at a premium over paying for education, sometimes you end up kind of fucked, and that's where we are right now. So higher ed in the state of Nevada, well, education overall, we rank like 49th, right above, like, I want to say, like Mississippi.
Yeah, something
right now,
like that.
Something like
we're
that.
We're pretty far down. It's either 47 or 49 at last check.
Yeah, yeah. And it varies, but we're always hovering right around
not
the bottom.
Anywhere in the top 50.
No, in the top 50. Zing. nowhere near where you want to be if you want to say, I don't know, draw businesses from outside.
Right.
Right. So we have these kind of dual problems, right? We have an economy, we're basically a company town at this point, where you have but one choice, which is to get into the casinos. Right, really. I mean, that they're really the only game in town. Overall, either you're covering casinos for nightlife or entertainment, you're working there, you're doing something involved with that industry. There's just not a lot of anything else going on.
Well, and it's not just that that's kind of your only option for work, but that also is pretty much the main source of tax revenue
yes.
for the state.
Yes. So we have these dueling things, and we need to diversify our economy to create jobs and whatever, because again, when people don't have extra money, they don't come here.
Right.
They're
and diversify the tax base.
Yes.
There,
well,
it's kind of a dual
the second
thing.
Part there, right?
Right?
Yes, exactly. With a diversified economy comes a diversified tax base, because I mean, in reality, look, we don't want to overburden any one industry with, you know, with kind of regressive taxes on them. We don't want that. I mean, I don't think that makes sense.
No.
In any light.
No.
You know, and that's the thing. It's a lot easier to, you know, to lift everything up if everybody throws a hand in, you know, to do some of the lifting. And so because of this kind of long-term issue, we're facing right now, according to the governor, Jim Gibbons, the man who thinks Wonder Bread is ethnic food.
I know you guys are going to be surprised by this, but in case you didn't know, Jim Gibbons is Republican.
Oh, extremely.
Just to put it out there, I'm not saying anything about Republicans in general. Just to clarify, his party leaning is Republican.
An extremely conservative one at that. You know, whose sole campaign promise is no taxes, no new taxes. Taxes are bad, 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 bad. Taxes bad, whatever. And so now we don't have any money for any education, but in particular, what I'm concerned with more than anything, because again, it directly affects me, and I understand that education cuts overall and our general poor state of education affects us all.
Right.
I mean, because you do have to rub up against these people in your day-to-day dealings. You know, who do you think you're dealing with when you try to get your coffee in the morning? Who do you think you're dealing with when you go out to a restaurant? Who do you think, you know, you deal with the community every day, and this directly impacts the community. Gibbons has simultaneously said that he wants to cut 10% of education, and then out of the other side of his mouth wants to make a 22% cut across the board, which is devastating.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it.
To give some context, I mean, if you extrapolate those numbers, the potential cuts specifically to higher education, if you were to look at them, they include shutting down nearly every college in the state with the exception of the University of Nevada, Reno, and University of Nevada, UNLV.
Right, with extra deep cuts to UNR, by the way.
Yes. The other options include cutting staff at UNLV by, what was it, 1,200 positions?
Yes.
Eliminating not just the football program, but all athletics.
All athletics.
Mind you, all this is speculation based on the numbers, but these are all very possible. And the interesting thing is, the governor prior to Jim Gibbons was also a Republican, Kenny Gwynn.
Yes, he was.
But Kenny Gwynn is a former educator himself and was a huge supporter of education, who actually helped institute the Millennium Scholarship.
Yes, he did. Which, speaking of cuts, you can kiss that goodbye.
Oh, yeah. That was funded. That was they basically took a tobacco company settlement funds and redirected that into creating an open scholarship for Nevada high school students to go to college here in the state. Pretty much carte blanche, almost. I mean,
yeah. Oh no, if you graduated from a Nevada high school. Yeah.
Initially, it was the requirements were very low. They eventually upped it to having like a minimum 3.0 or something because the funds started to run out, which makes sense.
Right,
but. That's a pretty good example of, you know, there's a big difference between the Jim Gibbons Republicans of the world and the Kenny Gwynn Republicans of the world.
Well, and there was also, I mean, there was an ideological shift also within that party and within that movement during that time frame.
Yes.
You know, at one point it was okay. It was okay to be a Republican, even a fairly conservative one, and still support public education and education overall. But, you know. Again, and it's no small irony that we're recording this at the tail end of the Tea Party convention, which was also going around. There's more education sitting in this room right now, PJ, than there is in that entire convention hall. And I'm just saying. I mean, again, and maybe you can prove me wrong and call me a big progressive socialist hater and whatever, but I'll stand by my words. Prove me wrong.
I think we've bored people to death with this politics
probably crap. You know what, if you listen closely, you can hear the sound of 1,000 mouse clicks just hitting stop.
Wow, that was really generous of you to say 1,000 mouse
right
clicks
now. Well, no, you're right.
I can count on two hands the number of people on Twitter following us that will probably listen for about the first 20 minutes, and we're at the 35 minute mark.
Don't discount the facey spaces and the me tubes and whatever
that's
else
true,
out there.
That's true.
Don't discount.
By the way, if you have not become a fan of us on Facebook yet, you should.
Yes, you should.
Just do a search for Pocketful of Awesome.
And that's Pocketful.
Pocketful.
Not Pocketful of. It's Pocketful. As in, like, a full pocket.
Right.
One word. Pocketful. Not,
yes.
Not two words. Not Pocketful of.
Are there people who are confused
awesome
by this?
I was confused about that.
Oh, yeah.
Pocketful. But I'm also borderline illiterate.
Pocketful is, you know, the interesting thing about Pocketful is it's actually an adjective.
Yes.
So right. It's sort of weird to say Pocketful of Awesome, but... at the same time, it looks better in a URL.
Right.
And you can also go to, you probably already have if you're listening, but you can also
correct
go to pocketfulofawesome.com to get any show archives, which this will be the first one in the archives.
Right. Our extensive archives.
And other stuff, which eventually we'll probably put this at the beginning and end of each show.
Some show notes, some links to the things that we're talking about.
We would have pictures, but you don't really want to see us sitting around in our underwear drinking beer.
It's very true, especially with the underwear that PJ wears.
Right.
It's embarrassing.
Well,
for me.
It's for the ladies.
For the men.
It's for the ladies.
Really, for the ladies? All the ladies?
All the ladies.
All the single,
all the single
ladies.
No.
Oh.
Wow. Didn't Beyonce get a Grammy for that? She got, like,
you know,
Song
what?
Of the Year, I think,
if,
for that.
If she didn't, she deserves it, because that's the best video of all time.
I've never seen it.
Of all time,
I've never seen
PJ.
It, but
of all time.
I'm going to take your word for it.
That's a lie.
I'm
going to
take yours and Kanye's word for
you
it.
You know what? When I showed up today, you were doing the dance. Don't even start with me. You were doing the dance. I saw it.
I'm in support of all the single ladies.
Aren't
so
we all?
I'm going to talk about something else.
Please do.
We're going to talk about concerts.
Something less boring.
Yeah.
Concerts.
So I went to the House of Blues inside the Mandalay Bay here in Las Vegas last week to see one of my inappropriately favorite bands, AFI.
Whoa!
Because I am 33 years old and they are one of my favorite bands.
They're
and,
like 42. What
well,
are you talking about?
We're about the same age.
Oh, pshaw to that. Pshaw,
anyway,
because I'm 72.
Right. So, did I just give away my age? Not that's like a secret.
I think you did. I think you did.
I didn't mean to mention that in passing.
It's the sound of the last two mouse clicks. Click and click.
We don't trust anyone over 30. Click.
But we do trust Michael Jackson.
Right, because in Michael Jackson we trust. That's a whole nother thing.
Isn't it?
So, you know, I'm at the concert, and this has happened a lot in the last couple of years at concerts I go to. People really aren't there for the music.
No.
They're
no,
there
they're
to hang out with their friends and talk, or to play with their freaking iPhones, or to just generally, like, be obnoxious.
Yes.
And this happened a couple of years ago. I was at Street Scene in San Diego, which is like a big summer music festival there. And then I was watching Tool, and I was pretty far from the stage, so, you know, I had to really pay attention to concentrate. And these, you know, Tool fans, I think, fall into two categories. You've got, like, your sort of artsy, depressed, manic, angst-filled, like, youth-type people.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least, you know, when they were youth and Tool was, like, fresh.
Right.
And then you've got your sort of macho, like, you know, alpha male sort of, because Tool has some pretty heavy charged songs. Well, I happen to probably, I fall into the former category more.
Right, yeah.
And I happen to be standing next to a group of the latter category at this show. And they were, you know, I appreciate their enthusiasm. I don't want to knock anyone. And,
no, it's
you
important
know,
to be enthusiastic
right,
about
but
music.
But I couldn't hear the band over the dudes shouting out the lyrics out of tune, you know? And it completely ruined my experience because I couldn't be immersed into it. And at this recent concert, and at a lot of concerts I've been to lately, it's the same thing. People, I actually don't mind if you're shouting out of key at our concert because at least you're into the music.
Right.
But dudes were just holding conversations behind me talking about, oh, why aren't they playing this song? They should play this song. Like, and I'm like, dude, why don't you worry about the songs they are playing? Like, you paid the same amount of money I paid with fees. It was a pretty big amount of money to see a band in a venue like this, and instead of enjoying the band and like being part of this sort of communal experience, you're ruining it for like everyone around you.
No,
if you're loud enough for me to hear you over a rock band,
yep,
then there's a problem.
Without a doubt, dude. I gotta tell you, I was fortunate enough a couple of months back to see one of my favorite artists of all time, Leonard Cohen. Only Vegas show ever, probably the
went to the Coliseum show.
Yeah, absolutely. Dude, I was like four rows back from the stage at the Coliseum show. Yeah, I wasn't going to miss that for the world. I missed him at Coachella the year before.
Yeah.
And, you know, dude's ancient, dude is sick, dude, you know, all kinds of stuff. I'm not going to miss the chance to see Leonard Cohen. I would go to my grave regretting it.
Right.
Fantastic, fantastic show. I had to hush at the show, okay? I had to hush two grown-ass women sitting behind me. A fight nearly broke out at the Leonard Cohen concert because of these two women. There was this gigantic mountain of man, okay? You know, looked like a biker, right? Four or five rows back, okay? And this was back from us. They were one row behind me, so four or five rows back from them, across the aisle, who screamed at them to shut the fuck up. That's how loud they were. That's how obnoxious they were. At the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace for Leonard Cohen.
That's amazing.
So, no, I mean, it's bad, and it's
pervasive. And those were pricey tickets.
That wasn't fooling around, dude. That was not fooling around.
You don't go there just to hang out.
No, you don't.
That's Leonard Cohen.
No, that is musical church, dude. Like, that is an epic experience, especially, again, it's the only time he's ever going to play here. Again.
Right.
You know, and these people did their damnedest to fuck it up for everybody in the area.
And it's interesting because I guess normally I'm used to that behavior coming from the kids. And when I say the kids, I'm sorry to those of you listening that may be in this age range, but I'm talking about people under 25. It seems like because you may have been brought up in a generation where a lot of what you do is interacting virtually, whether it be online or via text messages or whatever the case may be, you never learned quite how to properly act in certain social situations. And I'm not saying, and I think I may have written something about this on my blog. I'm not saying that, like, you know, there should be some sort of manners class or you're being like socially appropriate.
No,
and it's
not
all,
at all.
It's all fussy.
All.
But I mean, I came up in a punk rock scene where people were there into the bands and that's what they did. And if you wanted to go talk about shit, you went outside where everyone else was smoking and you freaking hung out and like talked about shit. And then you go back in and it's all about the music.
Right.
Like that is what you're there for. You're not there to freaking, you know, it's really strange. The sort of paradigm shift here. And I've seen the same experience at movies. I go to movies.
Oh my God. Going to movies
people,
now.
Because people again, and this probably started a while ago, you know, I mean, we've grown up in eras of VCRs and DVD players and, you know, Blu-ray and whatever is coming up now, where, although, you know, I miss Laserdisc.
Oh, right.
Because that felt like real. It's like vinyl. You have those giant discs and you have
seriously.
To keep them, like, you know, hermetically sealed. And
yep. If you even look at them funny, they never play right again. And, ah.
But,
no,
you know,
absolutely right.
People go to the movies and they act the same way they do probably when they sit on the couch at home. You know,
oh,
they make commentary throughout because, and I don't know, maybe we can blame this on Mystery Science Theater 3000 because everyone thinks that they're like some sort of funny commentator.
No,
but
you know why I can't blame it on MST3K? And I will tell you why. Because that was actually funny and thought through and well considered and there was a point to it. You know, I mean, again, I'm not above giggling at somebody else in the movie theater if they say something legitimately funny at the right time.
Right.
No, these are people playing fucking Bejeweled on their iPhone.
Right.
In the middle of the movie and having full-blown conversations. Again, look, I understand that when bitches be calling and whatever, like, you got to take the call.
Right. You got to handle business.
Because you're very important. Yes. And that's the number one thing here. I know you're very important. But I guess consider the fact that I am not that important. And so maybe I don't need to hear your very important conversation. It's amazing right now. It's like you can't even go catch a fucking matinee, right? 3 p.m. on a Tuesday.
Right.
Without damn near getting into a fight at the movie theater.
You know who runs the movie industry?
Who, PJ?
I say that common enemy is the white man.
It's true.
I'm just saying.
It's absolutely true. Saying. No, I was just thinking about that.
I know you were.
It's true. No, you could see it in my eyes, couldn't you? You could. You could get that feeling that I was getting a little riled up.
The things I see in your eyes, Mike, I don't know that it's safe to share that with our listeners.
I don't think it is either. I think, you know what, that's at least episode maybe 3, maybe 4, and then we can get into that.
Right. And by the way, we're doing episodes in order. We're not doing like a George Lucas thing where it's like episode 1's going to come out in 25 years.
Maybe we should. You know what?
This could be episode 4, actually.
Maybe we'll be the lost of podcasts. Maybe we'll just, maybe we just need to sit down with, you know, some darts and some butcher paper and just throw darts at it and we'll just do things out of order. And what do you think? I think it's difficult to do a camera monster. In audio, though.
Right.
I think that's very hard.
Well.
But I'm pretty sure you could figure it out.
I could. There's sound effects I can hook up once I find more than.
I say that common enemy is the white man.
Man, we're gonna need some new sound bites before the next episode.
You know who's in charge of sound effects, don't you, PJ?
Our producer.
Could somebody get the producer on the phone?
Hey, by the way, if anyone wants to be the producer for the show, please let us know. Because obviously we're not good at talking and assembling crap at the same time.
No.
I want to tell you the preparation that went into the show. I'm not going to get into the details, but so we did mention that this came about just by some random happenstance on Twitter. Which, by the way, Mike and I have known each other for like four years. Yeah, about
4 or 5 years. Years, dude. We've known each other for a while.
I don't know why he's laughing.
I have because I have a story about that because I think I broke somebody's heart a while back.
Oh, Christ.
About the time frame in which we've known each other.
Okay. I want to hear this, although I don't know if it's going to embarrass me.
Oh, no, it's not.
Not that
not
I get embarrassed.
Nah,
I mean, I'm a guy that takes off his pants at bars, so
no,
whatever.
it's not embarrassing.
But yeah, we were just talking about this, and you know, we tend to go get, like, you know, if we're in the same room, we'll just talk about bullshit, and we figured, well, maybe other people might be interested in hearing our bullshit, and you know, it didn't help that we had people support us in this idea. you know, we go, oh, we're going to do a podcast on Twitter. And then all of a sudden, our friends on Twitter are like, yeah, you do this. I'll listen. I'll freaking chew. Whatever. So
we'll see.
In preparation for this, pretty much all we did was shoot emails back and forth with like random topic ideas of whatever was coming up, which I guess, you know, is pretty topical, but also kind of all over the map. And we tried, we talked about developing a structure at Frankie's, I think, that night. And
then yes, we
decided
yes.
that, well, we'll just kind of have a loose structure and play it by ear. And then this morning, literally at like maybe 10 o'clock, which was like 2 hours before this whole recording session began, I threw together some music that Mike's emailed to me along with some stuff that I had on my iTunes, and I scavenged it looking for sound bites as well and intro music that I had not even thought of. I mean, I thought of it. I was like, oh yeah, dude, we'll need some intro song. And I just, and after screwing around with my mixers and plugs and cords and wires for like an hour, probably the smoothest part of this was breaking out the Patron and cracking the seal on that.
Well, that makes everything smoother.
Yeah. So, I'm not sure what my point was. Oh yeah. So that's the preparation that went into today. What we're hoping to do is in future episodes, actually prepare a little better. And, now that the system's kind of set up, which I'm going to have to totally tear apart for my own band practice tomorrow. Cause you know, it's all shared equipment. It'll probably get foobarred. So what's this deal with me breaking someone's heart or you breaking someone's heart?
I wish I could remember who I had this conversation with, right? But it was one of those people. You're the mayor of Awesome City.
I am the mayor of Awesome City.
You know that. And so your name comes up in random conversation quite a bit when I'm out and about doing the things that I do.
Right.
Which
going to class.
Class? What's that?
Going home?
Dude? Yeah.
Oh, that's right. We're not going to have universities for Mike to take classes
right.
at.
Right. No, there's going to be none of that. I'm going to have to leave the state to go find a university.
Here, ASU's nice.
You know what? ASU is nice. ASU is nice. And the student body is gorgeous. I'm just saying. That's, I used to live right down the street from ASU.
What I hear and know from personal experience.
And it's, yeah, it's pretty fantastic. Love the ASU. So big ups to ASU. Now back to the story.
Right.
Thanks for the digression.
No problem.
God. So I was out and about.
Pocket full of digressions.
Pocket full of digression. We're going to rename the podcast. Anyway, I was out and about and I was talking to somebody and your name came up like it does. And they were talking about how long they'd known you. And, you know, and I was like, oh, no, that's awesome. You know, and I was expecting, you know, 10, 12 years. I was expecting, you know, some kind of Blood Brothers, you know, back in Nam kind of story out of these people. And
so you guys might not be aware I did fight in Nam.
It's true. It's true. And he has the scars to prove it.
I do.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah, and they, you know, they're going on and on about how long they've known the mayor and all of this. And I was like, wow. And they're like, yeah, so I guess I've known him for about 2 years now, 2.5 years. And I was like, wow, that's a long time. That's it. No, that's it. That's all I got. That's all I got. No, because I was laughing because I don't even think about how long I've known you,
which has been
for a while, but not that
long. It's not that long.
No, it isn't.
In the context of Las Vegas, 4 years actually is pretty long.
And that's the difference, right?
Right.
That contextually, that's like, shit, dude, that's like half a lifetime.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you're like my emergency contact when I go to the ER now, you know?
It's all it takes.
Like, when, you know, when I need a kidney transplant or whatever, you're the one I'm calling, Chief. Yeah, no. So get ready for it, because that's coming right
up. Try to keep that in mind.
Yeah, please do. But yeah, no, and I guess that was the overall point of my lackluster, non-pointed story, was that, you know, the concept of time and time frames gets so heavily skewed in this town to the short end, because we are so transient.
Right.
That people think that, you know, wow, man, 2 years, 2.5 years is forever.
You know,
forever.
I was married for 7 years. Let me tell you, that's a lifetime. But we're not going to talk about that now. You know what? What's interesting, though, speaking of running to people that you've known for a long time, I am going to talk about this for a second. I was at First Friday the 2 nights ago.
Yes.
With the annual.
The monthly
arts festival and arts walk in downtown Las Vegas.
Which, by the way, with budget cuts, we're actually going to cut that down to an annual. It's just going to be the first Friday of every year.
He's just kidding, kids, by the way.
Yeah, no, we're not going to cut
What's weird is, despite their own financial difficulties, I mean, it's still been going strong.
Yeah.
And it's it's 7 years now, almost.
Right, right.
Or after, or, yeah. Yeah, 7 years. It was 7 years last October.
See?
So I'm in a gallery last night.
Which gallery?
The Fantastic Place Gallery, which is on Main Street, just north of Charleston, kind of sort of behind the Morgan Exterminator building.
Mm-hmm.
The famed Morgan Exterminator building.
I was just going to say, which is a fabulous building in and of itself.
And if anyone cares to buy it for me, I'll be happy to do something with it.
It is absolutely available.
Place Gallery is run by Gina Coranto, which is an old friend of mine from high school. We took art classes together, and we were sort of like, you know, part of the outcast set in high school. Anyway, I ran into a friend who was manning a table of a guy who was selling art, mostly cartoon-influenced stuff. And he's like, oh, you know the artist, right? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. He mentioned him by name. Don't ask me for the name.
It's okay.
It's really not important. I mean, it is important. But
did you hear that, art guy?
Right.
You're not important.
He's gonna. You know what the funny thing is? When I get to the end of this story, it's going to make sense why he probably hates me. By the way, I did buy one of his prints last night. I mean, on Friday night. So whatever, I made up for it.
Well, it's important for the mayor to help out the little people, isn't it, PJ?
Right.
Really?
So this friend of mine, he's like, oh no, this is a Joe or whatever. And, he says, and this Joe guy, his name is Joe, by the way. he says, oh no, I know you. And it was, gave me that look sort of like, I know you, you tried to fuck my sister once or something. And I don't recognize him at all. He basically, when at the tail end of high school, which now was almost 16 years ago, Jesus, a bunch of people in intersecting social groups, but not necessarily the same social groups, sort of like the indie right. rock kids and then the sort of goth metal kids, in which I sort of fell in that group for I don't know why.
Yeah, no, lots of long hair, some right, exactly. eyeliner and some leather pants.
We didn't break into, but we did trespass on an elementary school after hours because, you know, kids just do dumb shit, but we weren't vandalizing
nothing
anything.
Malicious.
No,
it's just something to do.
We were just hanging out on like a weekend night at an elementary school after dark. And I think, so this guy was friends with a couple of guys that I took the same art class with that we were all friends with. And I was really heavily into this Jim Morrison phase at the time.
Sure.
So I had the long brown hair and the leather pants and everything. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, this is 1994.
Which, for the record, I know nothing about.
Right.
Because I never did any of that.
No.
Ever.
I had an identity crisis, but it's fine. I mean, I was 17. That's the time to do it.
Yeah, no, that
it's
is
better
the time
than doing
to do
it when you're like 30 something.
You know what? But the only better thing about having the legitimate midlife crisis is the Porsche.
Right, right. True.
I mean,
true.
Really.
So anyway, this guy tells me. Well, he starts off the conversation by saying, "Yeah, I think we almost fought."
Oh,
and I'm like,
Jesus.
I'm like, wait, what do you mean we almost fought? And then he explains the situation to me. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that night. You know, I mean, I remember very clearly. It's one of those weird nights that you just remember, you know? And I was there like walking on the rooftop ledges and like singing.
You were the Lizard King.
I was the fucking Lizard King. I could do anything. I could make the blue cars go away.
Oh, Jesus.
And I guess at some point I was walking down one of the kind of corridors. In Vegas, we have most of the schools are based outdoors. You sort of go from like compartment to compartment and you have to go between. So I'm in this one of these outdoor corridors and he says something to me. I don't remember what he said, but I threatened to kick his ass and I got all in his face from, you know, like 20 feet away and they kind of backed down because... Like, even though I wasn't, like, a big or tough guy, they were sort of, like, the really nerdy indie kids that were, like, into Ween and Pixies and stuff. And so I was slightly more badass because I had combat boots on.
Right, right. Yeah, no.
So I could step on their feet because they were wearing Chucks, and I could crush their toes, at least.
Right. That's fighting. That's fighting
right.
amongst the
right.
peak set.
So, I obviously, he remembered this, and I didn't remember him. No, I mean, it was fine. We got along. Like I said, I bought some of his art. I actually asked him to contribute something to one of my comic anthologies.
Which are?
I'm the publisher of a small comic book company based here in Las Vegas called Pop Goes the Icon, and we have a new anthology series that launches next week called Omega Comics Presents.
And what can we expect in this comic anthology?
Action, comedy, drama, and nonsense. In full black and white.
In full black and white.
Full black and white.
So no special edition on this one?
No. Not when you're ordering 1,000 copies of it.
Wow.
So this is for real shit. It's available in Las Vegas at Alternate Reality Comics and Comic Oasis. Cover your both sides of town. It's also available online at popgoestheicon.com. Or if you're in, for some reason, Halifax, Nova Scotia, it's available at Strange Adventures comic shop up there. And hopefully by next issue will be available at every comic shop in the United States, Canada, and surrounding islands or whatever.
That's pretty awesome, dude.
Anyway, that's I really wasn't trying to get a plug in there for me.
No, but I figured that was as good a time as any to get your plug in. Because that's the thing, dude. It's pretty impressive. I will say this. I'm going to sing your praises here for just a minute. A lot of people talk a lot of shit about how they're going to do this, that, and the other thing.
Like a podcast,
right. Except that they usually probably get caught up in the whole planning phase.
Right.
They don't just plug some microphones into a computer and go. And again, I gotta say that it was like, what, halfway through last year?
Just about.
You know, and fortunately, at least at the time, a lot of this decision-making process was kind of documented online.
Right.
Where you were like, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to do it. I've been wanting to do this. So I'm going to condense all my online activities. I'm going to strip them down, and I'm actually going to focus on doing something that, that I want. And dude, I mean, I got to tell you, it's turned out I haven't had a chance. I'm actually staring at issue number one of Omega Comics.
He's staring
Comics
at it longingly.
Presents. I am. And kind of licking my lips.
At the terrible cover art by me.
At the same time. Oh, and it is awful too, by the way, guys, this, never mind. I can't even make that joke, dude. I was going to make this joke and I'm not, that's how bad the joke was that I'm actually going to self-center the fucking joke.
Wow.
Self-censor the fucking joke. Whatever.
Well, you are self-centered, but
I
that
am
has nothing to do with self-censoring
obviously, newly
yourself.
Self-centered, actually,
right.
which is a different topic altogether. But no, I'm actually staring at it right now. I have four different copies of your other comic
right.
series, The Utopian.
The Utopian. America's Most Emo Comic Strip.
Which is
not really
not
actually
not
America's Most Emo Comic Strip. It's irony, but apparently some people don't get irony.
What's irony?
Actually not irony?
No, it's not irony.
It's
Alanis.
Yeah. It's the Alanis version of irony.
It is. And that's the best part of it.
It's hipster irony is
right,
what it is.
Right.
It's like wearing a Guns N' Roses t-shirt even though you've never listened to Guns N' Roses and you were born after Appetite for Destruction came out.
Oh.
Which, by the way, that's not like a stretch.
No, that isn't a stretch
because,
at all.
Because Appetite
not
came out
all.
In, what, 87?
87, 88.
88.
Something like that.
And
yeah.
If you were born after that, you could be almost 21 at this point.
Which is a little creepy.
It is.
And makes me feel extra old and kind of lecherous.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
saying.
Only if you're lusting after a 20-year-old.
Shut up.
Which
don't
you're not.
Talk about me. Don't judge me. I will have none of this. Listen. One thing that I will say about the Utopian back on topic,
yes.
Back on the non-topic,
yes.
Is I am rather fond of your protagonist now. Because the protagonist in this doesn't really give away a plot point, a minor one maybe, underwent a spontaneous makeover, which made him look like the lead singer to one of my favorite bands of all time, Greg Dooley from the Afghan Whigs. He's
really?
Like, seriously, he's cruising around. He's like one double scotch on the rocks away from Greg Dooley now at any given
time.
Especially
not with the blonde hair, I would have never thought that.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I was just like, wow, that's amazing. So anyway.
I think we'll need to do an episode where we talk about the Afghan Whigs at some point.
We could do that.
Hey!
Hey!
Segue. Let's
Speaking
talk about
music,
some music.
Yeah, since we've prattled on about other things.
This is just our intermission music. It'll segue into
gonna,
something else.
Gonna bump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Music. We're going to talk about some stuff. We're going to introduce you to some stuff that you may not have heard, and we're going to discuss some stuff you definitely have heard, and I guess so. Mike, I sent Mike an artist. One of the things we did talk about, definitely wanting to do here, was kind of bring in whatever we're kind of really into at the moment, or whatever we're thinking about at the moment, and share some music with each other and the listeners, and then talk about it. Yeah. And I suggested an artist, and Mike suggested an artist as well. And I'm going to let Mike start if you want to talk about
my Ike artist, Riley. Ike Riley, the Ike Riley assassination, as it were. Yeah, Ike Riley is kind of a fascinating character, actually. Had a brief musical career, solid like 15 years ago, something. Ended up as a doorman in Chicago, selling drugs, by his own admission. This is nothing that I'm spilling. And if you listen to the music, but yeah, no, it's fascinating stuff. And what I find to be one of the biggest tragedies, we just went through the big end of the decade thing,
right?
Where
the non end of the decade,
right? But you know, whatever. When we decide on something, it's decided upon. And so, even though it wasn't actually the end of the decade, everybody
did their end of decade
list. All your pitchforks and your stereo gums and whatever, and your Rolling Stones put out their best of the decade lists. And there were two big travesties that I found, okay? One of which was that At the Drive-In, Relationship of Command, was not on any of them, which is just mind-boggling to me. And the second one was that Ike Riley and the Ike Riley assassination weren't on any of them either. And what's interesting was I don't think you had heard Ike Riley before I sent this stuff to you.
I did not.
And what was your takeaway on the Ike Riley?
My takeaway was that the Ike Riley assassination is exactly what I would expect to hear on a critic's best of anything list. It's just the type of music that I hear on Sound Opinions, Studio 360. And these are exactly the kind of programs I expect them to spend an entire episode talking about the Ike Riley assassination.
Right.
This is the kind of type of music I expect to find on a critic's best of list that I scratch my head and say I would have never bothered to listen to this band. Not because of lack of quality, but because it tends to be falling into that spot that for some reason doesn't catch my... It doesn't get me in the gut.
Right. Right. Which, I mean, and again, I will say flat out that I would have completely missed this band. I never would have even known that these guys existed had it not been for my buddy. You've met him, Josh.
Yes.
Josh Crabb.
Yes.
The Joshua Evan Crabb.
The Joshua Experience.
The Joshua Experience. And it is an experience.
It is.
It's a good one, but an experience nonetheless. He is like a fucking bloodhound for good music. His talent for that is absolutely amazing. And just kind of offhandedly one day he threw this on, and I was just like, hot damn, how did I miss this guy?
Should we play a track?
Yeah,
or part
know,
of a track, you know
what?
First
let's,
before we
let's give
drop
the people
the knowledge?
Yeah, before we get any more into it, let's go ahead and play the people the first track that I pulled, which I believe is Hip Hop Thighs number 17, and the 17 is very important.
Hip hop has blown my mind. John Cash has done his time. When you and I were in the weeds drinking wine, with that English singer in your hip hop thighs. From guns on a roof to the acid jazz, to the reels and rhymes of that Gaelic trash. Dancing with the ex-lead singer of the Clash. Guns on the bar and his hands on your American.
So that's a Ike Riley assassination and Hip Hop Thighs number 17.
Yes, sir. Yeah. You know, and again, the thing that I really dig about this band is every single thing that they do, it sounds like a party. This sounds like the kind of thing that if you were in I don't know, a fun college town and wandered into a house party, that there is a high likelihood that there could be this band playing someplace
right,
in that house.
Right.
It sounds like a party. You can tell that they were having a blast when they made the music. The lyrics are fantastic. In what, like less than a minute of that track right there, we name checked Joe Strummer and we name checked Johnny Cash. Yes. It's pretty fantastic. I like that track a lot. The only problem with that track that I will say is there is a tendency when people get introduced to this band that they will play that shit on a loop over and over and over
and
again.
And that's a problem?
It becomes a problem. It's not a problem initially, but it is so catchy, that tune in particular, that it's just like, now it is like, it's like a deep fried Twinkie. To get a little like extra Vegas on you right there. It is so saccharine sweet. Delicious, no doubt, and a tasty treat, but it gets a little excessive real quick. But a quality track nonetheless. And I think a great kind of primer and introduction to the
band. Now this next song that introduced here, I don't want what you got going on.
Yes.
Now this, I was doing a little bit of research on the band, and I guess this has become pretty much the theme track for some radio program somewhere. I don't know if you knew this.
Oh no, I didn't.
They play that. Forgive me for not putting in my notes which station or program this was. You can look it up. Just Google Ike Riley. They play this at the start of every show.
And it's fitting, actually. And when you hear this, you know, again, it's kind of interesting. This is something a little more recent from them, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm probably wrong, and feel free to
I will say that nothing
whatever.
That you selected is from the last album or two.
Which one? Sparkle and the Finish?
Two of these are from Sparkle and the Finish.
Okay, same. This is what I get.
Sparkle and Finish probably sounds like maybe a good place to start for most people, from what I can tell. But you can correct me, because I didn't know anything about this band this
honestly,
morning.
I would point people to, I believe the name of the record is Salesmen and Racists.
Yes.
That's actually pretty, that's a pretty fantastic record.
And that's an earlier album.
Lots of really, 2001, really good stuff coming off that record. Lots of good stuff coming off that record. But yeah, I don't want what you got going on. Again, it's a little different. It's a little darker, I guess, than some of the other stuff. It's not quite as uplifting. And he does get a little dark. He's very Catholic. Which is kind of strange, and when you start listening to the catalog, makes a lot of references to it. But no, I mean, again, a fascinating song. I really dig the production on I Don't Want What You Got Going On a lot. I don't know why, but I dig it. I just really dig it. I think it's again a good quality track.
Let's take a listen then to I Don't Want What You Got Going On by the Ike Riley Assassination. Was the Ike Riley Assassination with I Don't Want What You Got Going On.
With some words to live by, I might add. Cars and girls and drinks and songs make this world spin around.
It's true.
Come on.
It's true, and like you were saying, it definitely does have that sort of college party vibe going on.
Yeah.
Interesting, slightly different styles there, though. They, for the first track that we listened to, Hip Hop Thighs, despite the name, actually has a little bit more of that jangly sort of college rock sound to it, whereas this one we just listened to is a lot more funk.
They really run the gamut. Yeah, they really, really run the gamut, this band. And that's part of one of the fascinating things that I find about the band, is that they do run the gamut from that kind of like slightly electrified folk kind of thing, just like singer-songwriter dude with his guitar kind of deal, all the way through, like, you know, crazy kind of like hip-hop beat and, you know, fuzzed out vocals and whatever, you know, maybe a little bit of that, that like Hammond organ thing
going on,
you know, for the funk and whatever. And I think the last track that we have here, which one did I pull?
My Wasted Friends.
And this is like, seriously, when I am on my way home from the bar in the evenings, when that happens, sometimes
evenings,
occasionally
says.
Evenings, early mornings, right. Sometimes late nights, whatever. This is one of those tracks that is like instant kind of, drunken revelry sing-along. It kind of, I don't know, I guess it's the middle ground, between the two.
Right.
Because, you know, you've got the whole big, full backing band, this, and there's one other track, which is like, I don't know, kind of the epitome of the Ike Riley experience, the mm-hmm. Ike Riley assassination experience, which is no longer a name, but a paragraph, called, Put a Little Love in It. Which is a really fantastic track too, but this is like this track just absolutely this is the sound of the end of a very good night out. So here you go.
Take my money, wreck my song, all the good times they got blown.
That's the Ike Riley assassination there with My Wasted Friends.
Doesn't that sound like a good time, dude?
That track I really dig.
Yeah.
And actually, and this is the thing. Like I said, listening to it, it's not the type of band that I would seek out.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to have a narrowly defined, not genre, but a style. And I was talking to Sarah, my patient and lovely girlfriend the other night. After we left the AFI concert,
mm-hmm.
because I noticed a pattern developing around bands that I was into, and newer bands, not so much older stuff that I was into when my younger years, like The Doors and Guns N' Roses
right.
and stuff like that. They tend to be fronted by charismatic, vaguely androgynous lead singers. They tend to feature shout-along choruses.
Oh, God, yes.
So, you know, when you're looking at what I'm listening to, you're talking about AFI, Muse, Thursday. These are all bands that fall pretty, and even though they sound very different, they all fall into that same sort of, you know, very anthemic sort of music. So this falls a little bit outside of what I normally listen to, but it's definitely good stuff. And
right,
you know,
right.
I mean, we have some, you know, we have undying love for Soul Asylum.
Oh God,
and
yes.
I think
oh,
that
Jesus.
not that Ike Riley falls into that mold. But it's much closer when you look at sort of the stylistically where they're and where's Ike Riley from?
Chicago.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're talking about Midwest.
I mean, seriously, right? And I have just undying love for all things Chicago.
Right.
You know what I mean? And there's something about that that upper Midwest kind of Great Lakes-ish area. Because, you know, you referenced Soul Asylum. It's that whole kind of Soul Asylum replacements.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That kind of jangly guitar, you know. And one thing that I will say, and this is in reference to everything that you had mentioned earlier, other than Muse, but we'll get to that in a minute. You know, you're talking about, that's some brilliant lyricist stuff going on. Through those bands too. I mean, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's just solid writing. And you know, and that's the thing. Cause I will be the first to admit I'm a sing along guy. Like, you know,
nothing wrong with that.
If you pass me in the car, dude, I'm singing along to whatever's on there.
Right.
At that point.
Right.
You know, so I like a lyricist who can make a smart reference. I like a lyricist who can turn a phrase. And I think all of the music that you were just referring to, I think it definitely has that quality.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, I love it. Love it. Love my Midwest. Love my Midwest and my jangly guitars.
Much love to the Midwest.
Seriously. We need more of that out here.
Except actually. For the weather. So speaking of the Great Lakes and the Midwest, I brought a little something special from Minneapolis. And that would be POS.
POS.
Now, POS is a hip hop sort of artist from Minneapolis. He is on the Rhymesayers label, which our listeners probably won't even have any friggin' clue who that is.
They tend to
specialize in, I don't want to say alternative rap, but real hip hop that isn't targeted at dance clubs. And this is not to say that that Jay-Z and Nas and all the big players are not real hip hop.
Can I translate that?
You can.
Please don't shoot PJ.
Okay, so basically, POS is a former punk rock singer, for lack of better. He actually was a dude that played in punk rock bands, and he wasn't really all that into hip hop until he realized that rap was a really viable method for him to get his message across. He raps about real shit, you know. He talks about big issues, he talks about little issues, he talks about himself, he talks about coming up and being into, you know, discovering punk rock and skating and stuff. And he calls his music basically rap to skate to, which, you know.
No, there's definitely a place for that too. I mean, and again, there always has been.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely.
I think we kind of lost that for a while.
Yeah, and it's funny because there really weren't such distinctions. I mean, when I was growing up in the 80s, you know, I mean, obviously hip hop started as sort of subversive and off the map before it was kind of brought to the forefront, but it sort of filled the same sphere as thrash rock, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was the same kids listening to.
We listened.
You know, to the things equally. And at some point along the way, there was a divergence, and there's always been like a, you know, it's come back together and apart over the years. But POS sort of toes this line between this punk rock energy and spirit and live instrumentation and like just really delivering just straight up flow. You know, he's a great lyricist and he's a great rapper, but he's got a great ear for music, and he actually plays music, which makes a big difference in the way that the songs are composed and written.
Right.
So I'm going to start with a track called Terrorish.
Terrorish?
Terrorish. I'm not like slurring my words. It's actually Terrorist with a H on the end. And this is from his 2009 album called Never Better, which also didn't turn up on anyone's year's best list.
Shocking. You know why, don't you? Because Animal Collective and every single thing that Animal Collective has ever released ever had to be on that list.
Fuck Animal Collective.
Yep. Get off Animal Collective's dick. Please get off.
So enough about Animal Collective. Here's POS with Terrorish.
That's good right there. Yeah. In the hallway, aim for the crack, fuck minimum wage, it goes. Anyways, sipping on his watch in, heavy headed living in and out of my skin. And living, glad for the chance. Glass full of gas with a rag in the other hand. Wild like a Taliban, wild like a child slapped in the grin. Black in the skin, packed full of carbon, packed full of carbon and starving again. Come on.
Bitch, eyes in the back of my
So that was POS with Terrorish. As you can see, there's a lot happening there. I actually discovered Terrorish. I discovered POS. I don't even know how. Someone must have posted a link to a video on YouTube. And it was a series that MTV2 did where they had, I don't know if it was in celebration of like some anniversary of Pearl Jam's. Maybe it was the 10th anniversary of 10 being released or whatever. Mm-hmm. But they had kind of different artists cover Pearl Jam songs. And POS did Why Go.
Ooh.
And it was basically just him like in his bedroom with a sequencer and a synthesizer, and it was friggin' mind-blowing.
Right.
He sang it. He straight-up sang it, Eddie Vedder style. But I think I actually like it a little bit more than the original. And I'm going to have to put this out there, by the way, just to clear the air. Pearl Jam's first three albums, I really dig.
Yep. Nothing but quality coming out right there.
I mean, especially the first two, but Vitalogy, I realize more and more as I like re-listen to the tracks from it, that it was a really great album that, because it took a stylistic diversion, probably isn't as recognized as 10 in Verses.
Right, right.
But anyway, he did this great cover of Why Go, and you know, it's just one take live for this camera, and I'm like, I got to find out more about this guy. So, you know, I, you know, did the old Google search, and landed on the Rhymesayers website and found they had a video posted there, and for one of the singles off this new album, Never Better. And I just, on a whim, I was like, I'm just going to buy the album. So I just went to Amazon, downloaded the album, and I was not disappointed. My $7.99 was well spent. You know, the thing is, he's a small artist, you know? It's like he plays mostly around the Great Lakes in the Midwest and doesn't get to places like, much like a lot of great
right,
indie
yeah.
touring artists, he doesn't get to Vegas. You know, I would love to see that stuff live, because you really couldn't tell with that song. But with this next track, which is called Drumroll, and you will see why in a moment, there's a lot of live instrumentation. When he performs with a live band, of course. I mean, and there's a lot of hip hop artists that do perform with live bands now.
Right.
I mean, it used to be kind of like the Lupe Fiascos and Kanye West of the world, but for the most part,
Don't discount the Roots.
Well, no, but the Roots is a band. I don't, you know, there's a difference between a hip hop artist performing with a touring band
and
a hip hop band.
No, fair enough.
The Roots is
a
band.
No, I'll give you that.
You know,
important distinction.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest, Black Eyed Peas used to be a band too.
Yes, they did.
Until Fergie came and fucked everything
up.
Well,
but, you know, she's very important. And don't knock the humps, dude.
Listen, they've earned their success by assembling catchy pop tunes. But I'm just saying, I saw Black Eyed Peas years ago, and
they
were more on the Roots tip than where they're at now. But anyway, this has nothing to do with POS.
No, it doesn't. Let's get back to the POS.
We're going to roll out Drumroll by POS from the album Never Better.
The world ends at the end of your block, and then little whirlwinds spin friction round the clock. I'll be savage, hunt and gather the average, rather cadaver. Cockback hammer, splatter matter all over. Cell phone and calendar, no peace. Yeah, in the middle of a war zone, with a normal explore, no sleep. Yeah, this ain't sound low on the down low, fight with a dream I creep. Yeah, I'll seek the flames, I don't need to speak. I'm paranoid like a man in the land of the free. To set up and let us burn and turn sheep. Damn, stop with the octagon, top your block. I'm going off a rock, the songs are more about dead. Just a little bit of prison creeping up on us. We don't listen to the reason anymore of us. These days, we're looking for our ways and rights. Like, okay, here, let's be clear for the record.
That was POS with Drumroll. That dude's got some mad skills.
That dude can spit fire, like straight up. Yeah, no, that's some impressive shit.
There's
right
a video for the first single off of Never Better, whose name I am just completely blowing right now. But the video is just manic. It's like him running around his city, like just being chased by dudes, and it's crazy. And it's another song that has a really has a similar beat to that. It's got a little bit more of like a jungle beat,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, you can see there you've got these dissonant guitars and this just live drums and just
the thing that's striking me about this. And this is the first time that I've heard any of this. So just first impression wise, this seems to be like kind of the logical extension of a lot of what the Bomb Squad and Public Enemy was mm-hmm. doing, which I mean, which again, I love, like that's just absolutely yeah. near and dear to my heart. But just that kind of like,
I had to fight, by the way, myself not to put Public Enemy samples on today.
Oh, we'll get to
we
that.
We might do that in the future.
We'll get to that. Yeah. No, dude, because I love the Public Enemy. But yeah, just, you know, just kind of the only thing that this is missing is like an air raid horn.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? but it's definitely there. It's definitely there, that kind of like the not quite breakbeat.
Yeah.
You know, but definitely some serious drum track going on. And then with the kind of dissonant things over the top.
Right.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. Loving it.
It's good stuff. So if you guys are out there, be sure to check out the Ike Riley Assassination and POS, both available at your fine internet music store near you.
That's right. No, the both of these artists, I will say this, you probably, if you're like most of us in the digital age, know where to steal this.
Right.
Automatically,
but
don't.
We would not recommend that.
No, not
especially
for these
not
people.
For these artists.
You know what? If you want to steal something, go steal Taylor Swift. Go steal Taylor Swift. Don't steal these guys.
No.
They deserve it. They absolutely deserve your money. They're that good.
Yeah.
And I don't say that about a lot of music.
They're what we call working musicians, where right. They work for their money. And
yes.
if you don't buy their music, they don't put food on the table.
And food costs money?
Right. And beans don't burn in the kitchen.
That's very true. I'm not going to do the rest of the Jeffersons, dude. I'm not.
I have a bluegrass take on the Jeffersons theme that I might have to bust out for next week, just since we mentioned it.
That kind of creeps me out a little bit. The thought of bluegrass and the Jeffersons. I don't think in my head that song ends the way that it probably should. You know what I'm saying? Just those two things put together. That seems like a different song. It seems like you might want to call some four or five lettered organization
right.
to help you out of that.
Right. So Mike, so I warned Mike that I was going to send him emails just with random topics last week, and I sent him the POS suggestion, and I think he sent me the Ike Riley one. But just kind of out of nowhere, I guess, maybe not, he says to me, and I'm quoting your email, "I need you to explain Muse to me, because seriously, I don't get what's so ooh-ah awesome about them. I think they're a decent band, but unremarkable." And he figures I'm the guy to help him understand, which makes sense, because
yep.
I have championed Muse. You guys might want to pick up, if you go to the Hard Rock Hotel sometime soon, they have a magazine they put out called HRH, and the cover story is on Muse, and it may or may not have been written by this guy. I discovered Muse probably about the same time most American music fans did, which was when their 2003 album Absolution came out. Muse kind of had a stumbling block in their... They're from the United Kingdom, and they've done pretty well overseas. Their first album was released, I think, back in 99. And it took them a while to get recognized in the States, because their big breakthrough album, which was 2001's Origin of Symmetry, didn't get released in the U.S. due to some nonsense. Basically, they had to deal with Maverick, and Maverick didn't think that the album... they didn't like the singer's falsetto voice, and they didn't think it was marketable to American audiences, which, if you think about 2001, kind of makes sense, because that's when the rap rock stuff was happening.
Yeah, yeah,
and
absolutely.
That was before alternative rock really came back after kind of, you know... being overtaken by a lot of grunting and, you know, whatever. So it took until their 2003 album, Absolution, to really break here. And that's where you probably first heard songs like Time is Running Out and stuff like that. I don't have like a song list in front of me.
Wow.
Whatever. Stockholm Syndrome, which I'm going to play here in a minute. Muse got compared to Radiohead a lot early in their career, which the weird thing is, as a Radiohead fan and a Muse fan, which I'm not like a giant, nerd for either. Muse, I'm definitely into enough to buy every one of their albums, but every one of their albums is consistent. It's always good. There's not like, well, there's bands.
Oh, you can hear the two Radiohead fans that are going to listen.
No, this is the thing. I'm not saying that Radiohead's not.
How dare you speak ill of the Radiohead?
I wasn't comparing the two. I'm just saying I haven't bought every Radiohead album, even though I own a few, just because I, for some reason, they didn't hit me at a time in my life where I needed to be hit. When I discovered Muse in 2004, I guess it was actually, maybe, because their singles took, you know, a little while to actually get out to American radio. It was the same time that Interpol broke. It was the same time that Franz Ferdinand broke. It was the same time that Bloc Party broke.
All of the Joy Division.
Right.
New Order-y dance pop.
Right.
Knockoff
which,
bands.
Which, by the way, Muse has nothing to do with. It just happened to be that at that time, that pretty much reinvigorated alternative radio. And in my case, it was actually satellite radio where I discovered all this music that, you know, up until then, I had been listening to the same crap I'd been listening to since high school. I was still listening to The Doors and Led Zeppelin and, you know, newer bands, really, except for the grunge stuff. There was nothing new after that I was really into. I was into Nirvana and I was into Soundgarden, and then I was into Soundgarden derivatives like Audioslave. But,
were you actually into Audioslave?
Well, I liked Audioslave's first album. I won't say I was into them. I will say that it was an interesting pairing and it turned out some really good rock records.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, I wasn't into new music for 10 years.
Right, right.
And then all of a sudden I was. And Muse was one of those bands. And I was like, fuck, Muse is the kind of music I would have made 10 years ago if I had more talent than I have.
If I was able to.
Right. Right. I mean, but honestly, I listened and I was like, this is like the perfect fusing of this sort of epic, anthemic rock with these sort of slightly electronic and classical inflections and a singer that's just, the range on his vocals is just amazing. I mean, he just tears it up. Differently from the way that, say, Chris Cornell tears it up, where, you know, they're both guys with amazing ranges, but they do different things with them. So you want to know what's so awesome about Muse.
Yeah, dude. I mean, and that's the thing, and I appreciate what you've said already, but let's hear something.
I'm going to play Stockholm Syndrome.
Okay.
And really, I only need to play maybe the first 8 bars of this song to really get across the awesomeness of
Muse. Okay, no, and that's perfect. That's perfect.
And I'm going to let that speak for itself.
Oh, we'll see about that.
So this is Stockholm Syndrome from Muse's 2003 album, Absolution. I'm not actually going to play any more of that track because everyone knows that song. Well, okay,
I don't actually know
Mike
that
doesn't
song.
Know that song.
No, I mean, and again,
but
and
that opening guitar riff pretty much tells you everything about half of Muse that you need to know. Insane musicianship with the creativity that, because you can be a great guitarist,
right,
but you could just, you could play the same shit that people have been playing for years. But the stuff that they do is just, takes it kind of to a whole new, it feels epic. There's just something, there's no other way to describe it except it feels epic.
No, that was pretty epic. I mean, and again, and almost immediately, that sounds to me, and again, this kind of goes back to the Radiohead thing. Mm-hmm. That sounds like if Tom York were actually fronting a rock band. and again, this is the thing, and I know I'm going to insult a lot of people, I am no Radiohead fan. I mean, I was a Radiohead fan. I am a Radiohead fan no more. And it's because they're not a band anymore.
Right.
It's seven dudes making bleeps and bloops while Tom York wails.
Which, by the way, the only Radiohead album that I own is The Bends.
Which is a fantastic
record. Which was
their
last rock record.
Fantastic record. Love it. Love that record.
And it wasn't, but the thing about it is, it wasn't just a purely post-grunge alternative album Like, they actually did dip into a lot of different sounds and textures that hinted at what they were going to do without going off the sort of deep end.
Right, right. Which, they're off. They're off the reservation. They have gone rogue, to borrow a phrase.
Yeah. Now, bear in mind, I liked stuff. I did like stuff on what was that album? Was it Paranoid Android? Or was that... Was that the track?
That was the track.
What was the album? Okay Computer. Thank you.
Is the name of the.
I told you, I'm not a Radiohead fan. I'm not anti Radiohead.
Right. No. Neither am I.
I like stuff off of Okay Computer. I like stuff off of Kid A.
Right.
But I don't like the albums as a whole. Like, they're okay, but the stuff that's come out after that, the In Rainbows,
yeah,
and
dude.
There was the one before. Wasn't there one before that?
Yeah, Amnesiac. Came
yeah,
after
I
Kid
I
A.
download. I did download tracks, and they're just there's nothing there to grab me. There's nothing to like that Muse track. That guitar
no,
comes
that's
out,
the thing, right.
And when those drums kick in, it grabs your nuts,
right?
And
yeah.
holds
no,
on to them.
Yeah, exactly. No, that track has balls,
right?
And maybe that's the problem. And this kind of references back to the decade lists.
Yeah,
you know what was number one on every single one of those, right?
I honestly paid
it's
no
fucking
attention.
Kid A, dude.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Every single one. And, you know, critical fascination or not, again, I just don't find that music compelling. I found Stockholm Syndrome compelling. Like, that's just a strong metal influenced
right.
rock tune.
Right.
Right there. No, and that I get. Like, that right there I get. So, fantastic. You're doing a great job, PJ.
Now, the thing with Muse, of course, is that they have that other side where they bring in these sort of prog rock symphonic things, which works in the context of the albums. I don't know if it works so well on a single level. Some of the singles that have been released off their albums, I've been questionable about, because I think for a mass market audience, it doesn't, you know, Stockholm Syndrome was one of their singles, but you've got something like the United States of Eurasia, which I don't know if you've heard this, and
nope.
I'm not going to play it. It basically completely mimics the structure of a Queen song. Starts with piano and vocals, and then comes in, you know, the bass and then drums, and ends with a piano solo. And it's a great song in the context of an album, and they tend to do these sort of concept albums
right.
that focus around sort of these paranoid, conspiratorial sort of
American audiences
right.
have zero patience for concept records.
Except Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck loved Muse's last album.
Which I'm sure they were thrilled with.
Actually, Muse released a statement saying that they do not agree with Glenn Beck's opinions and politics, and that they do not support his... Like, basically, they're like, fuck off.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great.
No, that's fantastic.
And that's the other thing about Muse
yeah,
is that
fantastic.
They play really serious music, it sounds like, but they don't take themselves seriously. I don't know if you've seen this video, which you probably haven't. I'm going to try to describe it to people. Basically, they went onto an Italian talk show, and they were told that they were going to have to lip sync.
Oh, Jesus.
Now, Muse is a rock band.
Right.
They're like a
right.
real band. So what they did was they switched up instruments, and the lead singer got on drums, which he doesn't play. And the drummer got on guitar and vocals, which he doesn't do either. Or he got on bass or something, and the bass player got on guitar. Whatever. They switched it all around, and they fucked off the whole song, right?
Right.
Just being silly, completely ridiculous. And then afterward, they gave the interview with the host of the talk show, and the drummer gave the interview as the lead singer. And it was hilarious.
That's fantastic.
If you know the band, if you're just an Italian viewer watching and you're not familiar with like the band's lineup, which there's only three guys in the band, then you have no idea what's going on. You're getting pranked. So they basically punked all of Italy.
That's pretty fantastic. That reminds me of the Nirvana Top of the Pops thing,
yes.
right? Yeah, yeah. No, see, and again, that's endearing to me. Like any band that'll do that, you get
and
points.
That's another thing. Nirvana was another band who had really fucking serious music.
I mean,
Kurt was singing his fucking soul out. But they were fucking silly at times.
Right. Oh, no, absolutely.
And
yeah.
I mean, Kurt didn't want to be the voice of a generation, which this is a whole nother
yeah.
topic. Well, when the anniversary of his death or something comes up, we'll talk about
that.
There you go.
Anyway,
so Muse, their other side is, I don't want to say softer, but it's definitely quieter. And I'm going to play quickly another track from Absolution called Butterflies and Hurricanes. And this kind of gives you an idea of the sort of diversity of Muse and why they probably pull together so many different people.
Change everything you are and everything you
Actually, the track after that gets into like and the really rocking stuff, you know, because that's what they do, sort of the quiet, the loud thing. Which, you know,
no, come on,
bands have been doing that for
as if that isn't displeasing, right? Or is displeasing? I don't know.
But you know that it. I think that they managed to take those different elements without diluting the emotional impact of the music. And this thing, you know, Muse's music is best when it's sort of this overarching, way over emotional, you know, thing that's happening, which they have some songs that, that completely don't fall into that, and which may not be my favorites, but that's Muse for you. So I don't know what to say what's so great about them. I think that the fact that they're not afraid to be bombastic is something that I really admire, because a lot of bands are, you know, they're trying to be real, or they're trying to replicate a particular sound, and Muse doesn't care about what it sounds like. You know, they write the kind of epic rock music that they want to write. And, you know, obviously it's just like with, you know, their album Origin of Symmetry. When Madonna said, "Hey, you need to freaking re-record the vocals," they said, "Sod off. We just won't release the album."
Well, no, and I'm glad you brought Maddie up, because I was going to earlier when you mentioned Maverick.
Yeah.
So essentially, Muse fans, you can blame Madonna.
Right.
So
you could blame Madonna for a lot of things.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I say that common enemy is the white man.
It's true.
It is.
It is true. No, it never gets old.
It's
either.
It's timeless.
No, you know
it's
what?
A timeless truth.
I think I'm gonna have to have you cut that down, and that's gonna be my new ringtone on my cell phone, just over and over again.
That's great.
No, I think it'll go over well.
Do people still do that? Do people do the ringtone thing?
I don't know, because I will say this, that it took me months to find a ringtone that made my phone sound like a phone, because that's what I really want. I don't need to sound like anything else. I need it to sound like a phone, because that's something that I recognize.
Yeah, I don't like my phone sounding like anything.
Yeah.
I have no ringer. It vibrates, and that's about it. And honestly, the vibration bothers me sometimes, too.
Although I will say that right now, my kind of de facto ringtone on here, and it happened by accident, is like the, I want to say it's like the first 16 bars of The Bleach Boys by... your face killed me, because you have no idea what I'm talking about.
Do I need
about.
To call you so that people can hear this?
Yeah, you could do that. You could totally call me right now.
I don't know where my phone is, actually, so
it's
I can't
all right.
call you. Oh, wait, it's right there.
Yeah, oh, look at that. Convenient. It is the opening portion of The Bleach Boys by the Dead Milkmen.
Oh, okay.
And so maybe we're getting a call coming through here.
Did you hear that there was a Dead Milkman reunion coming up here? Have you heard about that?
Interestingly enough, I was just on their website.
Because I thought I read something about that.
And I want to say their bass player killed himself.
It's possible.
A while back, one of their members killed himself, which is very sad.
Right.
But they just, I want to say they just released We Are 20, which was kind of their celebration thing, because they released We Are 10 when they'd been together for 10 years, and now We Are 20. But yeah, I didn't catch anything about any kind of reunion.
I swear I don't know, you kids, look it up, they may have played one show.
But yeah, because I think in the question section of their website, they said, like, you know, Dave's dead, dude.
Right.
Like, we're not doing it, and we all have families and jobs, and
which I appreciate that sort of integrity to say, hey, you know what, we're not the band without this guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Let's not milk it.
Absolutely. Like, everybody. I mean, I'm sure we have some people to single out, but no, it happens plenty, dude.
And I get it. I mean, you know, listen, if your job is musician, and if your optimal way to make money from that is to, you know, piss on the grave of your dead band members, and that's what you got
to
do.
Yeah, do your thing, but don't expect me to respect it.
Right.
I mean,
seriously. Yeah. Anyway.
So, yeah, what? Anything else? Anything else before we wrap up here on the awesome?
I don't think so. Mike, I just wanted to let you know that I don't know how to quit you.
Our listeners, if you could see what just happened here, I feel...
Your parents wouldn't let you watch it.
I feel like PJ just looked into my soul just a little bit. And you know what? Here's the beautiful part. My soul was looking back at him. It was a moment. And I'm glad you could share it with us. I really am. I'm glad I was a part of it. I hope that I'm a part of it more often. I mean, if I could just live in this moment for the rest of my life, PJ, I think I would be happy. Do you think you could be happy just living the rest of your life in this moment, PJ?
The world just don't work that way, Mike. So I think that's about gonna do it for the inaugural episode of Pocket Full of Awesome.
Pocket Full of Awesome.
I think I just yelled into the mic.
You probably did.
I'm looking at this, by the way, and my levels are way over yours. And I try to accommodate for this.
I'm less important.
Well,
I want
you guys. Mike's sitting in a relaxed position. My love seat here, the love seat.
Because I'm a pretty, pretty princess.
And I'm like huddled on the floor among all of these electronics and stuff like that, and right next to the mic, and it's probably not good.
Nah, we'll work it out.
So, anyway, that's it for Pocket Full of Awesome.
This is actually kind of like two pockets full of awesome.
Well, it
isn't
is.
Isn't
it? We'll try to keep it down in the future to
But I think for the inaugural one, I think we did everything that we possibly could, right?
This is some inspiring fucking
isn't
music,
it?
Man.
I know. We went from all intense and lovey to... Kind
this
of
is how we want
ending.
To lead people off, though. We want them to feel inspired and empowered to really state what their dreams are and dedicate their lives to those dreams. So if your dream is to create an awesome podcast, well, I'm sorry we beat you to it.
We beat you to it.
So pretty much you're screwed.
You know what? Find a new dream.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Find a new dream we already took your dream. And try to make your dream something that Jay Leno isn't involved with also,
yes.
Because he's going to take your dream too. We're like the Jay Leno of podcasting.
We are. Wow, we just lost all of our listeners.
It's done. I don't know.
So thanks for listening to Pocket Full of Awesome, episode one.
Hopefully one of many.
Yes, and we'll see you next week.
Find us, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can find
Pocket
us on the web.
Pocketfullofawesome.com.
Not awesomeness.
What
the fuck are you doing, dude? Pocketfullofawesome.com.
That's what he said.
You can, fucking hell, you can find us on Facebook, Pocketful of Awesome.
You can follow Mike on Twitter, at Mikey Vegas. That's M-I-K-E-Y Vegas.
And you can follow PJ at PJ Perez. That's PJPEREZ.
Yeah, there's not much to it. And I guess that's it.
I guess that's it.
We'll let this powerful music play us out.
Powerful music. See you next week, gang.